Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Do you wish you knew the saints better? Overwhelmed with all the events in Catholic history and just wish you could tie it all together? It's tough work, and even scientists have determined that it takes approximately 400 repetitions to create a new synapse in the brain. Unless it is done with play, in which case it takes between 10 and 20 repetitions. Introducing Saint Cards, where the facts about saints and history are presented in fun and engaging games for ages 4 to 104. Check out Saint Cards at saintcards.com and begin the fun for your family, school, and parish today.
Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
What are you doing this Lent? The St. Paul Center is streaming their newest video Bible study for free starting Ash Wednesday. Based on Scott Hahn's renowned covenantal theology, this is a study no one should miss. Invite your friends, Catholic or not. Don't miss your chance to see this premium study for free. Go to stpaulcenter.com to sign up today.
Hello and welcome to Real Living. This is Lavinia Spirito, and I am by myself today. Mary Lou has had a death in the family, and so she's going to have some time off, but we shall soldier on. I just wanted to tell you a little bit about the trip that I just led to Italy, to San Giovanni Rotondo, and to Rome, and to places in between. Really fun pilgrimage. We had a great time. I'm going to start off telling you about it by kind of highlighting two of these places that we went that are not in Rome or San Giovanni Rotondo, but have to do with Eucharistic miracles. Those were fascinating, and I thought that a lot of people who were there actually were very touched by our trip to the two spots of the Eucharistic miracles. The first spot that we went is a town in Italy called Orvieto. And Orvieto is about northwest of Rome. It's about an hour and a half up the autostrada, the highway, in from Rome. And I made a point of putting that in this itinerary instead of Assisi, and we've gone to Assisi several times, and we might obviously go back next time, but I wanted to kind of give an opportunity for this particular city to be highlighted, especially in view of what it represents. So the city of Orvieto is a medieval, actually it's not medieval, it's actually quite old. It was an Etruscan city, so that would put it several centuries before Christ. And of course, you know, taken over by the Romans, and then, of course, ruled, I think it was part, actually, of the territory of the church, the temporal patrimony of the church in the Middle Ages. There were a couple of churches that had been built in very old times, so like before the year 1000, but by the time the 1200s had rolled around, those churches were falling down, and you have actually records of people of the bishops and the priests in Orvieto having to go somewhere else to celebrate Mass and to celebrate various occasions because the churches that were there were falling down. But either way, the churches, the original churches, were built on top of an Etruscan temple, which I thought was cool. And also another thing is the whole city of Orvieto is honeycombed with tunnels and with grottos. Some of them are handmade, but the majority of them are actually natural ones that actually served the city well in under siege and at times like that, but also were handy storage places during the Middle Ages. Now, why am I going on about Orvieto? Well, the city of Orvieto is a delightful medieval Italian town that you should visit, definitely famous for its olive oil, for its balsamic vinegar, for the truffle-infused stuff. I mean, just really wonderful things to eat. But the main reason I put it on the map is because it is the Duomo, or the cathedral in Orvieto, which dates back from 1263, or actually maybe a little bit later, 1290, is the repository of one of the major Eucharistic miracles in the life of the church. This is the big one. And the story goes that in the 1260s, 1264 to be 1263 and 1264, a priest was celebrating Mass in the cathedral with some serious doubts about the church, doubts about his vocation, and unfortunately also doubts about the real presence of the Lord in the Eucharist, which he was confecting during that Mass. And I think the Lord has a sense of humor, because I could just would love to have seen his face as he is expressing these doubts, as he is thinking about it. During the elevation, the host actually starts to bleed. It bleeds what turns out to be, upon examination, human blood, and drops of the blood start to drop from the host onto the corporal, which is a square of cloth used on the altar during Mass, and stains this white linen cloth. So apparently he didn't know what to do. He didn't know if he should stop, if he should keep going, you know, what he should do. Apparently he elected to keep going. And then without saying stop, go, or anything like that, he just got in the car. Of course, he wouldn't have gotten in the car in the 1260s, but he got in the fastest way of transportation to go visit the Holy Father, who was residing next door in Orvieto. Now, I misspoke. This Eucharistic miracle occurred in the city of Bolsena, which is right on the lake, which is about 10 miles away, maybe less, from Orvieto. And so the priest decided to you know, forthwith kind of get as soon as possible to where the priest, the Pope, was residing in Orvieto. Orvieto, even at the time, Orvieto in Viterbo, two central Italian cities, were known for being sort of refuges for the pontiffs who would leave Rome for extended periods of time. In this case, I looked it up, actually, and it looks like the unrest, the civil unrest in Rome, was so bad, and the control of the noble families in Rome was so overbearing that a lot of popes made sort of a practice of kind of spending extended period of time in these cities, a little bit removed from Rome. Not too far, but, you know, far enough. And so the Pope just happened to be in Orvieto and presiding over his papal court. And the priest brought him the corporal, which is known as the Corporal of Bolsena, which is, of course, the name of this town, on the lake where the church, where the miracle occurred. And so after a series of tests and ascertaining the facts, he proclaimed this to be a valid Eucharistic miracle and decided to enshrine the corporal with the evidence of the divine blood stains in the church in Orvieto, except that the churches at the time in Orvieto were falling down. So that's why preparation was made to build this stunning, if you've been there, stunning Duomo, which was consecrated in 1290. Actually, it wasn't consecrated. It was begun in 1290 and not ended until a little bit later than that, to house this miraculous piece of cloth, which unfortunately we were not able to see. It's only exposed three times a year. Now, that is the main reason, I think, to go. And I think our group was very moved by just being in that environment and hearing the story. But it also, and I will explain, also there's some amazing art on the inside of the Duomo, including a whole series of paintings that Michelangelo consulted before he painted the Sistine Chapel. So to me, that's amazing, because you can see a lot of what the Sistine Chapel owes to Michelangelo's inspiration from the Chapel of San Brizio, which I think Beato Angelico, which is the name of the painter, the Blessed Angelico, I think he was a friar, he decided to kind of paint his version of the Last Judgment on two walls facing each other in this chapel. And it is truly unbelievable to see how much the Sistine Chapel owes to this chapel in the Duomo Orvieto in terms of inspiration. Another stunning thing is that it is a striped church. So you may have seen examples of that, of course, in Florence and in Siena and even in northern Italy. So it's beautiful sort of alternating of two different colors of stone, creating this striped effect. But really and truly, the most amazing part of the Duomo is, I think, from the visual point of view, is the facade. It's the entrance. Because it to this day, it's beautifully colored. It's got beautiful blues and golds and greens. And it is, of course, decorated with all the scenes from the Gospel and from the Old Testament. So you have beautiful portrayals of the baptism of Jesus, of the crowning of the Virgin Mary, and so on. And also, like, beautiful symbols of the bronze statues of the symbols of the evangelists. So there's a statue of a man, a statue of an ox, a statue of a lion, a statue of an eagle. So that's really cool. And then you have bas-reliefs, which are representing, of course, creation and stories from the Old Testament, the raising of the bones that Ezekiel speaks about. You could be there all day. We were there, it was cold, it was blustery. So we didn't spend as much time looking at the facade as we should have, but it was truly an amazing thing. So let me tell you a few other things about the story of the corporal of Bolsena and how and what were the results, what were the consequences of this particular white linen cloth with bloodstains being displayed in this brand new Duomo. Well, for one thing, before the Duomo was even begun, the Pope decided to call a noted Dominican friar who was, I don't know if he was nearby, but he was definitely accessible, to write and to compose hymns for a new feast that the Pope conceived upon viewing the Eucharistic miracle. And this Eucharistic miracle is, in fact, the one that's at the basis of our feast of Corpus Christi that we celebrate after Pentecost. And the Feast of the Corpus Christi is known for its praise and its worship of the Lord in the real presence. And there are Eucharistic processions carrying the Blessed Sacrament, and there are many other expressions of veneration that actually find their origin here in this town of Orvieto, where the Pope decided to enshrine the corporal with the evidence of the Eucharistic miracle. So I think that's just so cool. And so if you ever have a chance to go, you should go. And if you want to look it up online, there's some stunning images. Even the inside of the Duomo has the striped pillars and the vaulted ceilings. And, you know, if you've been to France, if you've been up in Normandy, it's the period, the cathedrals are all about the same sort of vintage, and they have that soaring Gothic elements to it, and with the vaulted ceiling and the flying buttresses and all that stuff. So pretty amazing. So what did St. Thomas Aquinas do? Well, St. Thomas Aquinas composed a number of hymns to celebrate the real presence and this concept that had always been known, that was the body, blood, soul, and divinity of the Lord, but it was decided to give it a name, transubstantiation, beyond the substance, which basically beautifully expresses and was also explained by Thomas as the accidents of bread and wine remain, but the substance becomes and is transformed into that of the body and blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus. And that is one of the reasons he composed these beautiful hymns that we sing during adoration. You may have heard of them, Pange Lingua, Gloriosi. And also, of course, Tantum Ergo Sacramentum, which is obviously, the iconic hymn to be sung during adoration. And it sings about how we down in adoration falling, we shut our mouths because we don't know what else to say. People wish they had seen this, and yet we are seeing it, et cetera. So he just expresses this beautiful feelings confronted with the majesty of God. Now, I think that they have tested the blood stains on the corporal, and they are too, like the blood of the shroud and the blood of the sudarium, and perhaps also the blood in the other Eucharistic miracle we're going to be speaking of during our next show, that in Lanciano, all belonging to the blood group AB, which is more common in the Middle East. So you can draw your own conclusions, but I thought that was cool. And in our last minute, let me tell you a little bit about these the paintings by Beato Angelico. Actually, Luca Signorelli is the guy. He's another Florentine painter who, in a certain way, was a mentor to Michelangelo, who came and saw these two. Well, there's several panels, but the most amazing are the panel of the Antichrist, and they make this guy look like Jesus, except there's some pretty disturbing details that show you that it's not Jesus. And behind him, he's got these dark figures of people who are pushing people away from the church and all that. And then on the other side, you have, of course, the reward of the blessed. But there's also another panel about the damned going to hell, So, and then of course the beatitude of heaven. So it's very interesting to see how Michelangelo got all this inspiration from beholding the chapel in Orvieto. That's all we have for today. Join us next time where we're going to discuss the Eucharistic miracle of Lanciano.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.
CMF Curo is the country's first Catholic healthcare ministry to provide an affordable health sharing solution rooted in Catholic teaching and community. Learn more at mycatholichealthcare.com/podcast. That's mycatholichealthcare.com/podcast.